races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Oaklawn Racing Casino Resort. Took 3 days, but we got it right for opening day of the, you can't call it the 2022 season, it's the 21-22 Oaklawn season for the first time ever. And it feels natural and it feels unusual at the same time. Good morning, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. A little. Good morning, everybody. A little bit different walking in this morning than it was the last couple days, right? A bevy of activity.
Well, and there's still a few odds and ends, it looks like, that have to be tacked up, and there's still a little couple of things going on down there.
Well, you know, there's always that. We talked about a couple shows ago that looks like it's never going to get done, and the gates don't open until 11, so there's still a few hours left.
That's true.
Move some chairs around and, you know, shine a few windows, but there's looking out the window here, it seems like there's more horses on display, and just everybody's out having a ball, getting ready. Is there still a little, you know, someone asked me yesterday, you're nervous? And I said, not really. And then you get here and you get a little butterflies, like
sure.
Everything's opening up, or first time here in December, first time a lot of things, but opening day is still opening day. It's pretty cool.
And that's true, you know, that's true at any venue, and it's true for really for all sports too. I mean, it's yep. I'm sure every, you know, team organization and the start of tournaments for individual sports, they all have the same anticipation. And
you mentioned it before, the anticipation in the town for what's this going to be like, right, is totally new. We walked around downtown last night,
yeah,
and just a lot more life than normal. Finally made it to DeLuca's Pizza, which is probably, haven't been here in 3 years. Been there, walked right by it a million times.
That's the problem. You hadn't been able to find it, and so I pointed it out to you on Wednesday afternoon, and gotcha. And Anthony in town, and the chance to introduce you to Anthony as well, and anybody that comes, we can't recommend highly enough.
No, and as a total pizza snob myself, I don't like a whole lot of pizza, especially outside the New York, New Jersey area. I'll be there once a week getting pizza from Tony. Just a great guy, great spot. So when you come to town, DeLuca's needs to be a spot that you that you stay. So anyway, we'll do a little bit more handicapping today, of course. Things going here. Double carryover in New York. We got Gulfstream starting up. Tampa's going. But let me tell you. Oaklawn Park.
That's why we're here. It's the priority. However, there are quite a few things that do need to be covered off, and we'll certainly discuss as well with handicapping guests Scully and Shapiro later. Dave Grenning is going to join us in about 10 minutes to talk about the Cigar Mile action. Nick Tamaro as well. The anticipation that Mary Rampolini will be around. I absolutely want to get Mary on as well. Plenty to do. A few things, though, in the short window that we've got. You mentioned the double carryover in New York, 289,000 after yesterday's rather... I don't want to say impossible, because it's funny, the big prices that came in, I didn't have any trouble having them in amongst the selections. The horse that absolutely tripped me up was that Electric Youth, the Rudy horse in the in the sixth, in that starter allowance where Moonrock started very badly, and it changed the kind of changed the dynamics of the race. But Luis Saez moved last, and that ended up being a good move. Wins and pays 23.40. You know, Reckless Spirit was a horse that had come up. I think with plenty of people's analysis, and Reckless Spirit wins for Jimmy Bond and paid $16. Space Launch, thanks to Rich Eng on his birthday, giving out a present to everybody. Space Launch, terrific job by Manny Franco, and at just under 10-1, $21 winner. And so that, you know, basically between the $16 winner of Reckless Spirit, the $23.40, and then Courvoisier in the nightcap, who I, you know, we really spent a couple of minutes discussing something that's going to come up with the Remsen and the Demoiselle. And again, it doesn't even have to be limited to two-year-olds. It's also true of three-year-olds when we get on the classic trail. The fact that nine furlongs is a dividing mark. We say it next spring, we'll say the same thing, that horses that get to 8.5 do not necessarily translate to 9 furlongs. It's a different animal. And the horses that just sort of plod along one pace, well, that's what Courvoisier basically looked like. And not to mention, this is a tappet. The dots all don't connect on a tappet the first, second, third time out. This was, you know, with experience, $30 winner. And I some people out there on Twitter that apparently put them together, Rich's Space Launch and Courvoisier. So anyway, you had a big pick four, $6,700. You had the pick five that paid $42,000. And then the pick six that carries over. You're gonna go down and do scratches.
Yeah, I've got
Dave Grenig at 8:15 coming. I understand.
A much prettier face going to sit here than mine for a second.
Okay, it's going to be probably 20 minutes at least with Dave for the Cigar Mile. I just don't want to hold Nancy up. Okay. So, as a result, you've got a big opportunity today. And frankly, what was unusual yesterday was that Radio Days, the Shug, Joe Allen, 1-4 runner, turned it into a pick five, but even that wasn't enough. So you come back today and you've got a chance at, I've already put up, the pre-scratch opinions, and we'll watch for the scratches later this morning and make whatever potential changes. It's a tough sequence, and it's a good sequence, and really worth, if you're not a big multiplayer, you can certainly dig in. It's a very varied, eclectic sequence as well, because you got a couple of claimers in the middle of it, a 16 claimer. You got a 25,000 on the turf as the ninth race, and that's interesting because there's a bunch of horses with turf season ending in New York soon enough. There's horses basically that are being offered up at a bargain claim price of $25,000, so it'll be it's very competitive, that ninth race. The maiden race is tricky. 2-year-old fillies going six on the outer turf, so it's going to be a challenge. There's no two ways about it. We'll also talk to Dave Grenig momentarily about what transpired yesterday. The timing issues continue to be a problem, and then the inability of the photo finish camera to provide a resolution, and that it's kind of just mystifying that. And wasn't a clear answer. I mean, this came in the sixth race, and so they ended up declaring a dead heat after watching frame by frame. And we'll see what Dave Dave is on site. So he can provide, you know, more insight to what transpired there. They ended up putting the Goddess of Snakes and Rosie's Peach as a dead heat behind Electric Youth and Chloe Rose. We also have to talk about the situation at Laurel, where after we brought it up, the decision was made not long after we got off the air yesterday to cancel the weekend, and they will continue to evaluate and try to figure out what the problem might be with the stretch where injuries and fatalities have been generated the last several weeks. So the frustration and the annoyance over this, obviously, the horsemen are really a little bit at wit's end, to be honest, from everything we're hearing and having communicated. You got a big two-year-old card tomorrow at Tampa, including the inaugural and the Sandpiper, and Gulfstream, of course, kicks off the winter season today. A couple of stakes this afternoon, but then tomorrow, the Claiming Crown with all the deep and, let's be honest, confusing fields that come together every year for Claiming Crown. Mike Welch will join us around 10:30 Eastern, and we'll get an early glance. It's also opening day for the 2 weeks at Los Alamitos, and tomorrow the Starlet, the first of the two-year-old events. And, of course, right here at Oaklawn, we've got the season kicking off, the stake, the advent today, first post today, 12:30 Central, 1:30 Eastern time. All right? Last night you had... Looked like a nice evening at Turfway. Hammer and I, as he mentioned, we were kind of out and about at downtown. We, you know, after we had a bite to eat, we at DeLuca's, we walked downtown, which is incredibly festive. And I, when we talked to Nancy Holtis after Dave Grenig, I'm going to ask her, because it seems like. You wouldn't necessarily imply that the town is all decorated up for the opening of the racetrack. It's obviously something that they do all the time for Christmas. But it's really pleasant. And then, of course, yesterday, forget Christmas. Yesterday it was like it was more like July 4th weekend. It was 80 degrees at a few different junctures in the afternoon. It was absolutely incredible. I actually went up. I never had a chance to go up the tower, the mountain road, and the National Park Tower. Is incredibly cool. So that was fun. I'll put up. I'll have to put up some of those pictures. I forgot to do that actually yesterday. So there we go. Let's get started. And Dave Grenig, Casey reaching for Dave, and we'll get going. And we'll start handicapping, start discussing mostly the races. There obviously is, you know, a little bit of the hard news and frankly, two, you know, a couple of unpleasant trees as already broached this morning, specifically the situation at Laurel and the timing and camera issue. It's got to be figured out. That part, it just you know, there's no excuse at all. So I'll ask Dave what he can. What he can impart. While we got a minute, actually, I can slip in two contest things that, and in fact, Nancy would even be taking interest in this, because Indiana, I got wind late in the week about Indiana's got a handicapping contest tomorrow. Nice one. And a couple of NHC seats. So there's that. And there's also the cigar contest that we mentioned yesterday, the $3,000 buy-in. 5 o'clock deadline today for the cigar contest. All right, FYI on that. And don't forget, you got to register by 5 p.m. All right, so a couple of contest notes. Well, he's expecting, Case, and he requested the 9:15. So, all right. While we wait, piece of news out of Nevada, Churchill and Nevada settling the signal. Probably should have just slapped Nancy in, and then of course when Dave, you know, when you're ready to have Dave in, they have trouble reaching him. The signal dispute that has dragged on and on between Nevada and Churchill ended, and widely applauded, and nice to get the signal out into everybody's hands. So that was one piece of welcome news. Welcome in Dave Greinig. Good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm all right. Dave, before we talk Cigar Mile Day and some very nice races, including the feature, bring us up to date on the photo finish miscue fiasco yesterday and the ongoing timing travails.
Okay, so yesterday's sixth race, they did not have an actual photo of the third place, of a close finish when it was the third, and in lieu of that, they brought the stewards brought the patrol judges down to their office, or to the steward stand, and they watched the video frame by frame, and placing judges deduced that it was a dead heat between the 1 and the 8, and I don't know, I did my own little look at it, and it seemed like the 1 actually got third, but it's just sort of in line with the follies that have been happening with the timing issues for a while now. And photo finishes. There's been a few instances where there hasn't been a photo finish, but they've been able to. I guess that's how they figured out a couple other positions too during either the Belmont meet or this meet. And I don't know. They're training a new person for this position. I don't know why it's so hard, but apparently it is. and that's where we stand. They call it a dead heat in the situation yesterday where I'm not so sure there was a dead heat.
Every expectation that this is a one-off. I mean, there's been the occasional.
No, I don't think it's a one-off. I think it's actually happened previously, and in situations where maybe they were able, by the naked eye to tell a little more clear than what I guess yesterday's situation was. I think it's happened previously where they didn't have a photo finish of a close finish, and I'm not saying they called it a dead heat, but they had to do a different, an end around, if you will, to determine the placing, and that's not the way it's supposed to be done, and it's certainly not the way it's supposed to be done at a NIDER track.
No, and then on the timing, on the timing front, I mean, it certainly seemed, the assumption that had been that it was a Belmont-centric issue, and that has proven not to be the case.
No, it's an operator situation. And again, another deal where I don't know why it's so hard, but it seems to have become difficult, at least from the standpoint of when you're supposed to start the timer. And, as the rails get further out on the turf course, it becomes, for whatever reason, it becomes a little bit more difficult to time it. And the person that they've had doing it And again, it's actually Equibase / Teletimer, which I think is one and the same. It's their individual employee that does it. And, you know, they have not been able to find the right person who can do the task. And again, I can't really fathom why this is so hard to get done. You know, you can understand when someone starts that there's a glitch. And I guess that's sort of what happened yesterday. I think they have a new person in there at the behest of Naira, because the previous person wasn't getting his job done. So now it's on-the-job training here at Aqueduct. And this person who was doing it yesterday, you know, just a little bit of growing pain. So I'm not so sure that one day ends that growing pains. Hopefully it's the start of a scenario where it won't happen again, but I'm not going to tell you that it won't happen again in the immediate future.
All right.
Also, Steve, I'm not sure if you saw this. I just put this out a little while ago. Joel Rosario is going to be out for a couple of weeks. He got injured. He suffered a hairline fracture of a rib yesterday in that spill at, right after the wire in the second race. So he will not be riding. Probably the earliest he could come back would be December 20th. At least according to Ron Anderson, he thinks the earliest that Joel could come back would be opening day at San Diego on the 26th.
Well, and I'll retweet that. I was utilizing your you being in touch, and I was hopeful when you said he appeared dazed that was going to be the extent of the unseating of the result yesterday. But all right. Well, quick recovery for Joel. And you know, this is actually significant, because it obviously, we talked to Ron at the beginning of the week, and it puts in, I would say, more than jeopardy his run at the grade one record and the stakes record that he's been chasing.
Yeah, he won't. I mean, even if he came back on the 26th, I think it'd be virtually impossible to get the stakes record. I think I just wrote this, and I had this sheet here, this little cheat sheet I had. It was about six away from one of them and seven away from another, and I don't know what happened to my little cheat sheet here. But and he was within like 1.1 million and change of IRAD's single year earnings record. Again, I think definitely the stakes record won't happen. He'd have to go off the last week of if he was running at San Anita. Here it is. He's 69 stakes wins. The record is 76. He can't do that. Rosario's got 49 graded stakes. Bailey has 55. You know, he'd have to, you know, win like every stakes race they ran at Santa Anita the last week, if he's even back, to get that. So, and he's 1.1 million away from IRAD's record. That, you know, that seems unlikely too.
Wow. Wow. That's unfortunate. All right. Well, he's all right, though. I mean, that's in the scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been worse. I mean, like, any time a jockey falls from a horse and hits the turf course that's, you know, kind of, well, I don't know. We didn't have frigid conditions yesterday, but, you know, any time a jock falls off, anything can, fact that there are more serious injuries is kind of a miracle, in my book.
Let's turn our attention, Dave, two things today. A $289,000 double carryover and as challenging a sequence again today. Yesterday, it's funny, you had a horse in radio days that seemingly turned it into a pick five, and that didn't help too many people. It was still very, very difficult, and I went through this card today. It is challenging today.
It is. I think favorites won the first two legs, and the weird thing yesterday is the 35-1 shot who ran second in the last. There were two live tickets for that one, but the 14-1 shot that actually won the race, there were no live tickets. And I know this is, you know, red boarding a little bit, and I'm not saying I would have picked him or anything, but just looking at the horse that won, I mean, $600,000 very well pedigreed horse figure that maybe it's just a combination of things, and I that you know, led to him not being on the ticket of the whoever constructed the tickets that were live. I also thought that the horse in the previous race, and this is not red boarding since I advanced him, Space Launch at 9-1 was a bit of an overlay.
Agreed.
In that race, in fact, I thought the first two finishers were, you know, I didn't get the favorite Matt Carruthers. Carruthers. I didn't get that horse being favored.
No, that was strange.
You know, maybe off the advertisement that the my racehorse people did. I don't know. But anyway, yes. And yesterday's sequence was hard. This sequence is equally as tough. We, you know, obviously we are on the turf. You know, for these last 3 days here. So we'll see. I mean, I kind of like. I hate when the single is giving out a favorite, but I kind of would revolve my. You know, I like Gold Panda a lot in race 7 for Charlie Baker. Nice draw, second off the layoff, good pace in the race to stalk. I think if he gets the right trip, and I think he should, I think he's up to beat.
I'm with you there, and there was somebody else that I was going to lean on heavily. I thought that Martini's Amica, Juan Vasquez, who was sent live horses into town, Martini's Amica in the two-year-old race, I thought was much the horse to beat. The interesting upset candidate, Chad Summers sends out, of course, Joel won't be able to ride, but Champagne Poetry has had a couple of bullets, and including a gate move, and the ones that have run in that sixth race today have not shown a lot of speed at all. So I would not be surprised if Champagne Poetry breaks on top. And if Reddy could wire, and I thought that she was a B in there, that's for Jonathan Hardoon of Ragazin fame.
Well, another one I might throw in there, too, is Glitter Up for Tim Hill's, blinkers on. Caught the slop first time out, ran against Radio Days. Who you just mentioned a little bit earlier, and I just thought, you know, going to the turf might be interesting. I know his numbers first time turf aren't great, Timmy Hills, but I just thought it was an interesting horse at a price there.
There was somebody you bring that up, and there was somebody else making a turf move. I thought was just kind of, I didn't know what to do. The Grossman horse, Big Bean Christine, who's a point of entry, getting on the turf. And I ended up picking her fourth just because I think there's reason to believe, you know, you don't have a lot to go on with Grossman from a record standpoint, but that's a horse that should take to the turf.
Right, and we're probably overcomplicating things because Holy Berries would probably be, you know, good second, closing up a fast pace. Doesn't necessarily mean that horse has to have a fast pace to be effective. It's just that there was a fast pace that day, so there was no sense in her being too close. I'm not, like you said, there's probably not going to go 44-4 in this particular spot, but it doesn't necessarily mean that she has to be back. It just means she was back that day.
Well, let's turn to Saturday, Dave, and let's go right to the Cigar Mile, and then we'll back it up with some other thoughts. This came up as speculated. It came up really interesting. There's talent here. There isn't necessarily huge star power, but it's competitive, and the weights, I thought the weights came into play here, which we don't usually talk about. What's your take on this Cigar Mile?
Well, I have a similar take as to what I was driving in this morning. I heard your replay yesterday, and I was a little bit surprised as well that American Revolution was made the favorite, just given, you know, that it's an open company, grade one, and his, you know, his dominance has been in New York bred races, but he's been dominant. I mean, I like the horse. He's a gorgeous-looking animal, and he's run basically every time, especially for Todd. The only loss was a third in the Pennsylvania Derby to Hot Rod Charlie and Midnight Bourbon. So there's no knocks on him. I just thought I was a little surprised to do the 5-2 favorite. I don't know that Todd Pletcher wanted the rail in all three stakes, but he got the rail in all three stakes. And following C, I'm sure he didn't really want the inside because it does kind of force his hand a little bit. And I know he's done really well on the pace. Those were 6 furlong races, and now we've got to stretch that speed out to a mile. And do they just go and try to open up? Look, as I wrote in my race preview, Independence Hall had his coming out party at Aqueduct as a 2-year-old when he won the Nashua by a dozen lengths, and then he came back and won the Jerome. And back in those days, he was a little bit of a bad actor in the paddock. I don't think that that's been the case now as he matured. He won a very nice, he put in a very nice performance in the Fayette Stakes, winning that race in front running fashion. I think a one-turn mile, as he showed here, a one-turn mile at Aqueduct, he's undefeated, and I think he has a very good chance to remain that way. Ginobili is interesting. I don't know what to expect from Ginobili. You know, Life is Good. He ran a terrific race against Life is Good, but you wonder which way they go at that point. Is that a heartbreaking race? Did Ginobili get his heart broken in that race, or did he get emboldened and did he come back with a solid effort? I think at a shorter price, I'm willing to, and coming back on 4 weeks when it seems like his races have been spaced out a little bit more than that, I'm sort of willing to maybe take a little bit of a stand again.
There's a couple of imports, and obviously when we get to Gopher Juan, we'll talk about Simon Callahan sending Bella Vita, Ginobili's presence in here and packing high weight. Given Baby Yoda, essentially evaporating since that Saratoga performance, Olympiad may be a bit of an overlooked entity in here and gets in at a featherweight.
Well, here's my thing about that. We've seen this so many times already this year alone for Bill's horses that run, so well in allowance company. And then when they step up into a stakes race, they haven't translated that. I mean, you can go back to Speaker's Corner, ran a, big race at Saratoga, went to Pennsylvania and was nowhere. Baby Yoda ran that monster race, beating Olympiad, and then came back and didn't really perform in the Boxburg. Forza di Oro didn't, I know he won the Discovery last year, but then this year came off that long layoff, run huge in allowance race, and then he didn't translate into the state. So, I'm not sure why this will be different. And now he needs a new rider because Rosario was named to ride him. I know IRAD is open, so I would anticipate IRAD getting the mount, but Junior's ridden this horse 3 times out of 4, so maybe he gets it back. I'm just sort of, I understand what you're saying. He's getting 8 pounds, but I think after seeing those other three horses kind of, shrivel at short prices in stakes races, I'm kind of against Olympiad here on Saturday.
Goes as the 10th. I always like when the big feature like this is the nightcap. Leading in, though, we got the two-year-old standards going 9 furlongs, and the Demoiselle and the Remsen. We got 8 packs for both, and got kind of an eclectic mix. Let's keep going backwards, and Todd will send Nest in here as the 2-to-1 favorite, but Clement with Tap the Faith. Certainly got to be discussed. I don't think I read the advance, I'll admit, Dave, on the Demoiselle. So fill us in.
Yeah, it's a little interesting that you really didn't get any of the stakes winners to come back. You know, the attempted winner, Gerrymander, is down south already for Chaz. And I think he was looking at running one in here, and then she got sick. The horse that was second, the Demoiselle. The Alcibiade. Distinctly possible. When I talked to him on Sunday, he was planning to run her in here, and something happened. I was told she got sick, so she didn't show up. So it's basically kind of a glorified allowance race here. Visually, you couldn't have been more impressive. I didn't think the Nest was when she broke her maiden, going a mile 16th at Belmont on the same day that Life is Good ran that day. And then she came back with a solid effort, although she maybe had a little bit too much to do in trying to close to get up in the 10th. But should propel her forward. She's by curling. She's out of an 8th mare. I would think a mile and 8 should suit her just fine. Maybe the interesting horse in here is Denti Valentine for Georgie Abreu, who looked good winning the Maid of the Mist against New York Breds, albeit a one-turn mile. he's pretty confident that she'll stretch out in distance. In fact, he was a little bit surprised how well she ran going three quarters, when she broke her maiden on the 26th of September. So I think she's a little bit interesting. Tap the Face, look, there's a big pedigree there, big price tag there, big win first time out, overcoming a bit of a slow start to get up. She's out of an Alabama winner. You think that two-turn mile and eighth should be fine for her. And there's another one that Rosario was supposed to ride, so Christoph will have to find a replacement there.
It's an interesting group, and as we discussed extensively yesterday, the moving from a mile or a mile and a 16th to 9 furlongs, there's a dividing line. There's an imaginary date line that horses cross, and there's some that'll just won't get a step past the mile and a 16th, even if they looked like they were going to. So that's what makes these.
I don't disagree with that. I think you're right. I think it's a totally different race.
Well, talk about the boys, where Mo Donegal, and you mentioned Todd drawing the rail, and here's Mo Donegal, the impressive maiden winner, going back mid-October, and made the 8-5 favorite. Seems appropriate. George Abreu, you mentioned. Al Gold's Homebred, Woohoo, That's Me, I thought deserved some attention. You got Shug in here. You got a little bit of everything. Butchie Reed coming to town. Zandon for Chad. Some thoughts on the Remsen.
Yeah, I mean, look, Mo Donegal looks like he wants every bit of this mile in AFA. His only issue so far in his first two starts is getting out of the gate, but once he gets going, and they do have to ride him along a little bit. It's not like he's just kind of cruising up there, and then they just unleash him. He does take a little bit of riding, so you wonder if that's just something that's a maturity issue there. But I would think that he would fit the bill going a mile and an eighth without much problem. And that's what I think you look for in these races, especially with these horses that are really just A other than who wants to go this far, or some guys just taking shots, or with a big pot, and how confident are they going a mile and eighth, two turns? I think Todd's pretty confident that Mo Donegal will fit that mold. Judge Davis, I watched his Nashville a couple of times, and it just didn't excite me. I know he won, and this is another scenario where, yes, he's won at a mile and a 16th. His maiden win, but I don't know. He didn't really look to me that he was looking for more ground. I shoved, throw some blinkers on him. Maybe that'll wake him up a little bit, but I didn't know what to do with him. And I'm kind of leaning a little bit against. One of the more interesting horses, I guess, is Chadsworth Zandon. I mean, he doesn't necessarily really go from enough talent to try it. I believe he too was looking at the Nashua early November, but he got a temperature and missed a few days. But it wasn't such a setback that he had to take him out of training for too long. He's by Upstart. I think he'll go at a Creative Cause there. I think he'll go this far. Whether he'll do it successfully in his second start against a horse like Mo Donegal on December 4th, I'm not sure.
I want to at least mention Ray Handel's maiden in here from Another Mother, who Dave Aragona made 6-1, and I might be a couple of ticks low, but he's forward going, and we just talked about Judge Davis and Mo Donegal, and he's been in reasonable proximity, and he's already got blinkers on, so other than putting periscopes on them, I don't know what else they can do. but this horse, I think, has got to be at least considered.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're like me and you do like Mo Donegal, then you can't dismiss some of the muscle.
Yeah,
like you said, he was second to the horse, but as you've also pointed out. The difference between a one-turn mile 16th and a two-turn mile 8th is considerable. But he does have some. He's got two of those races, and he was second to Judge Davis in that particular maiden race, two back. He's got a good foundation under him. does he want to go this far? I guess this is what you find out. I mean, it's not a bad spot to put him in to find out. And again, it's not an overly, you look at this race, you don't say, oh boy, I'm scared backwards. Everyone has something to prove here. And why not, if he's doing well and it looks like the work tab says he is, why not take a shot and it'll let you know where to go? I mean, to me, the unifieds, I mean, I guess we have to see if the unifieds are going to go this far. I haven't seen that many unifieds, period. But we'll see if they stretch out. If not, then we have a nice bevy of one turn races, in the wintertime, too.
Well, interesting, Remsen. And I'm sure that minutes after the race, there'll be people taking to Twitter to say, oh, that horse will never do anything in the Derby. That'll be the the immediate reaction.
Well, I think it's been since Thunder Gulch, maybe, the last Remsen winner that sort of won the Derby. Now, I know Bluegrass Cap won second in the Derby in Belmont, so we can't dismiss the exploits of that horse. But
The famed Remsen curse.
I still remember calling John Kittle after Thunder Gulch won the Derby and saying his wife was hitting him with a pillow on the couch.
Talk about the Gopher Wand and Lady Rocket for Brad Cox. I'm coming to you from Oaklawn, as you know, and Frank Fletcher, I imagine, will be watching from Oaklawn tomorrow. Sharp Star, Rocio De Paz, and Barry Schwartz, Truth Hurts, who has turned in several nice performances, and I mentioned Bella Vita earlier. Simon Callahan sending the cowbred into New York.
Yeah, why not? Right? I mean, it's the one turn mile race. She should be able to. I would think, her success at 7/8 seems to support, Bella Vita. I think she could, maybe stretch out. I tell you, a horse that you didn't mention that I'm a little bit interested in at price, maybe to get the late pick four started off on a good note, is So Darn Hot for George Weaver. I think this filly is a one turn horse. Her best races have been the one turn mile on the 16th. She tried the one turn mile on the 8th and the turn back the alarm and was a respectable second. Gibberish won the race by almost 4, but she was 5 clear of the rest. Maybe a mile on 8th would tick too far for her. But coming back to shortening up to a one turn mile, I think she's a bit interesting at a price. Sharp Star, last year she came into this race off a dominant win against New York Breds. This year she's coming in against the Sharps, against the dominant win against New York Breds. And, I think she's going to take all the beating. She looks like she's back to that form from last fall. But I'm a little intrigued by So Darn Hot for George Weaver, who's not had a great meet, 0-19 on my PPs here. But why not get off the duck in the great three?
There were a couple of surprising numbers. You mentioned that, and yesterday when we were sort of just going over the fields off the draw, Hammer and I were kind of waltzing through the overnight, and I had noticed on the Thursday card that Bill Mott was 1-25 going into the week.
Yeah, that caught me a little bit by surprise as well. I was like, wait, he doesn't usually have those types of slumps, but this is a good weekend to try and get out of it.
Well, a couple of good maiden specials that lead into the stakes card, all stakes pick four, and the racing has just been so good. I mean, all Belmont Fall, and it's translated into Saratoga and Saratoga into it's Saratoga of Ozone Park, as they call it. the racing, Dave, looks terrific tomorrow, and if I wasn't here, I'd be there.
What are you doing there? What track is this for you this year? You've been all over the place.
Not as many as usual, but I was on my way. I've got to be in Tucson for the symposium, so I looked at the schedule, and I said to Hammer, I'm going to Tucson. Why not come for this novel opening day at Oaklawn? And everybody was gung-ho and said, absolutely come. So here I am.
I was going to say, does Waze take you to Tucson via Hot Spring?
Well, it I don't know. I'm over the 50% mark, I guess. But once you get past Chicago, I I figure I'm close enough. Although I still have to drive. I do have to drive back to Memphis to get on the flight to Phoenix, to then drive to Tucson. So it may be circuitous, but my mentality is once I leave the house, I can turn up anywhere.
Are you staying at the new Oaklawn Park Hotel?
I'm staying at Shea Hammerly. Hammer's got this terrific condo on Lake Hamilton, which is really pleasant. And I've stayed on Lake Hamilton a couple of times, and I really like it. But we toured the hotel, Dave, and it's just spectacular. I mean, what they did.
Is that a hotel, casino, or just a hotel?
No, it's part of the casino. It basically the whole thing now flows out. You come right through what was the HHR parlor, the instant racing parlor, and it flows right into there's a convention, not a convention center. It's a smallish convention center. The hall holds about 1,400, and then there's like I think four ancillary meeting rooms, but it all spills out. They've got beautiful restaurants and a spa, and it the thing is a home run. The people that come out here, whether they're just coming to play and to visit, or owners that are coming to run, are going to be just they're going to gush.
Sounds good.
So make your plan and.
I do mean it's on my list to get to, but I've never been there. So hopefully I can figure out a way to get there.
I highly recommend. I've been coming now 5-6 years. Usually this is Jay, right? Jay comes for Derby.
I think he sort of made it depends. Sometimes it's been. COVID has sort of interrupted it, and
right.
You're going to make me go back to like 19 or 18 to figure out when, when he traveled there. But I recall what he was telling me earlier, I think the way the schedule lays out, he might be able to do the Louisiana Derby, Arkansas Derby double without having to, going from one venue to the other without having to go back west. So we'll see if that actually plays out.
Well, we went to DeLuca's last night, and Anthony said, "How long are you staying?" I said, "Well, I'm heading out this weekend, but I said I'll be back at least twice. I've got an HBPA convention is here too, and so I've got to come for that. And it's the week after the Rebel, so I've got that double in there. So I don't know about the Derby yet, but I'll definitely be back for that Rebel March section."
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I hope, Dave, that I'll be at Aqueduct. There's a chance we're hoping there's two races in the book for us, for Kid Chocolate and Scherzando, next Sunday, the 12th. So maybe if get lucky, we'll see you then.
Sounds good.
Dave Grenig, everybody, DRF Grenig, and Dave will be busy tracking the action and taking photographs and timing the races today.
God, I hope not.
Thanks, Dave.
Races to be won by open length.
Exactly.
We need some dominant wins. Give the guy a break.
Too funny. Dave Grenig, folks. We'll stay right here, obviously, and since we're kind of watching for Nancy to come back, Nancy Holtis, I was worried about that once Nancy had to go downstairs, she might not get back. But in the meantime, we've got, we think we're going to have Randy Moss. Randy texted me and listening in, and he was eager, I think, to talk about the history of two-year-old racing at Oaklawn. So I'm anxious to, we'll see if we can't get Randy in here. And he said there's some great stories about, and that has been one of the things people have talked about, that how, there hadn't been a two-year-old stake winner since the 70s. And Randy Moss joins us now. Randy, good morning.
Hey, Steve, good morning to you, sir.
How am I in Hot Springs and you're not?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that very question. It's my hometown. I'm going to make it there at some point, I think, in December, just to say that I experienced Oaklawn's first ever December racing dates. But I hear it's a great day there.
Well, yesterday in the high 70s, and I mean inglorious, I went up to the park, to the Mountain Tower, which I had never done.
And it was fabulous
day for that. And I love going around the whole town. I do this every time I come. Whittington Park, which is one of my favorite things to do. There's all sorts of nooks and crannies over there. It's just such an amazing town.
Hot Springs, Arkansas, I can testify, was a wonderful place to grow up. It really was.
It's got sort of, I don't know, there's a bit of a Huck Finnish, a Tom Sawyer-ish. I could see being a youth here could have been a lot of fun.
Well, and then, of course, going back earlier than that, you've got the history of baseball spring training.
Yep.
Which basically began in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Babe Ruth used to come there, used to go to the races at Oaklawn, a lot of other, Cy Young, a lot of other famous ball players participated in spring training at Oaklawn. There's even a picture around Oaklawn. It used to be hanging in the executive offices of Babe Ruth at Oaklawn Park on a horse. Then you've got the whole wide open gambling, organized crime, Al Capone, the whole era of Hot Springs, Arkansas as well. So it's got a rich history in a lot of different aspects.
Well, and with that kind of introduction, we will remind everybody, as we did yesterday with Louis Sella, that The Vapors by David Hill needs to be on everybody's reading list if it isn't already. And you want to buy a book for somebody that you know likes gaming and kind of, down and rough and tumble gangster activities and everything that this town is famous for, the Vapors. The Vapors has it all. And Randy, it's funny, timing issues, we talked most recently, but something that you're excited about and clearly everybody has talked about is this two-year-old aspect of running juveniles at Oaklawn, and I did not get much research into it. Give everybody, some of the background and some of the apocryphal tales.
Well, Charles Sella stopped the practice of running two-year-olds at Oaklawn in March and April. He stopped it either in 1974 or 1975. I'm not sure exactly which, because he felt like it wasn't good for two-year-olds to run that early in their two-year-old season. But before that, Oaklawn had a couple, would run not only maiden races, they'd run a couple of stakes races every year called the Ballerina for fillies and the Oaklawn Preview for colts. The Ballerina started in 1954, and it ran through either 73 or 74, I'm not sure which. But there were some pretty illustrious names of fillies that won the Ballerina, including one filly, if you don't mind me going down a rabbit hole here.
Sure.
By the name of Crimson Saint. Okay, Crimson Saint in 1971 was at Oaklawn Park. She was owned by a former SMU quarterback named Roger Braw, who was a rancher in Kingsville, Texas. She was daughter of Crimson Satan. And Braw ran Crimson Saint in a 4-furlong maiden race at Oaklawn Park in March. She won it by 12 lengths. He came back and ran her in the Ballerina on April the 1st, 1971. She not only won the race by 5 lengths, she tied a world record for 4 furlongs, 44 4/5 seconds. She was also injured coming out of that race, so Braw turned her out for about a year, decided he was going to bring her back in Southern California. So he sent her out to Hollywood Park to a former quarter horse trainer, a veteran guy by the name of Rod Kaufman, and Kaufman decided to bring her back against older males as a 3-year-old filly in a 5-furlong stakes race on the turf at Hollywood Park named the Meteor. She not only won that race, she had an 8-length lead at the top of the stretch on some of those older males. She won it in 56 and two-fifths seconds. She came back, beat older males again in a stakes race after that. She was hurt. She bowed a tendon. Okay, she was off for another year. So Rod Kaufman, the trainer, decided that after she breezed three furlongs in 32 and four, she was ready to come back and defend her title in the Meteor, coming off a one-year layoff. He got Lafitte Penkai to ride her. She set the stakes record. She won by five lengths. She went 5.58 in 56 seconds flat, breaking a 17-year-old record. Penkai said it was the fastest filly he'd ever sat on. And Crimson Saint wound up winning 7 out of 11 starts. They got ambitious with her. They ran her at a mile and a 16th, and she didn't last. They tried her at 7/8 of a mile. She didn't quite last. She finally was injured and had to be retired. And the owner, Roger Braw, bought a share from one of the original syndicators in Secretariat for two breeding seasons to Secretariat. So he bred Crimson Saint to Secretariat, okay? I know this is a long story, but stay with me here. The first one turned out to be not so hot, so he decided he would sell Crimson Saint and cash in while he could, and he bred her to Secretariat again and entered her in the Keeneland All-Ages sale in January of 1976, where Tom Gentry bought Crimson Saint for what was then a sales record at that sale, $295,000, carrying a Secretariat foal. That foal wound up being a filly, and Gentry sold that daughter of Secretariat the next year in a yearling sale. Now, Rod Kaufman, the quarter horse trainer that I told you about that had Crimson Saint,
yeah,
he also had a son-in-law who trained horses. They shared a barn together at San Luis Rey, and when the daughter of Secretariat was entered in the yearling sale, the son-in-law said, wait a second, this filly is a spitting image of her mother, Crimson Saint. Crimson Saint was one of the fastest fillies to ever run in Southern California. He got together a couple of owners, and the son-in-law named D. Wayne Lucas decided to buy this filly by Secretariat, who turned out to be Terlingua.
Yeah.
Terlingua, of course, was the fastest two-year-old filly to run in Southern California since her dam, Crimson Saint. She wound up being a sensational racehorse, of course. She never quite panned out later in her career, but Terlingua was ultimately bred to Storm Bird to produce Storm Cat, obviously one of the top stallions in America for a long time. A little bit later on, Gentry decided to branch out and breed Crimson Saint to Nijinsky instead of Secretariat. And the resulting foal there, who he sold for $3.4 million, wound up being Royal Academy.
Yep.
Who won the 1990 Breeders' Cup Mile, ridden by Lester Piggott. So Gentry wound up selling 10 yearlings out of Crimson Saint for $18 million. And now, if you go back to this, you know, this 1971 Ballerina Stakes winner and the two-year-old stakes at Oaklawn Park, Crimson Saint, you can go back and you can look at a couple of pedigrees. Crimson Saint, of course, foaled Terlingua, who foaled Stormcat, who sired Yankee Gentleman, who sired Little Princess Emma, who foaled American Pharaoh. Crimson Saint, you can also trace Crimson Saint through Terlingua, Stormcat. Stormcat sired Hennessy, who sired Johannesburg, who sired Scat Daddy, who sired Justify. So the last two Triple Crown winners of American racing trace directly back to Crimson Saint, the 71 Ballerina Stakes winner at Oaklawn Park.
In other words, we can expect huge things from the two-year-olds that are going to be campaigning here. Randy, this is going to be sort of like a "This Is Your Life" moment. But let you say somebody wants to say hello to you.
All right. Randy, this is Mike Browning. I just wanted to say hello. We're getting ready to start again, and we've known each other for 40 years, and it's just another year at Oaklawn Park.
Mike Browning, the beer man.
That's me.
We used to have a keg of beer in the press box at Oaklawn Park, believe it or not, which is always a dangerous thing when you have an open keg combined with horse racing media. But, at the time, way back when, Mike used to take care of the beer keg. He worked for a beer distributorship in Hot Springs and used to be a regular in the press box for reasons other than that. Mike, great to hear from you, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I just work on Saturdays up there robbing the public with Muldoon. It's just like it was in the old days.
Well, great to hear from you, my friend.
Okay, well, come see us sometime. We'll see you later.
All right. Take care, Mike.
Bye-bye.
I couldn't resist.
I used to have a key to the beer keg in the press box at Oak Park, by the way. It was locked up, but I had a key, which was very helpful at times.
Well, you got the key to the city. You got the key to the quarter pole. You got. Randy, the excitement here is pretty palpable. Everybody's intrigued as much as anything, but it feels like it's going to work. I had an extensive conversation with Lewis Selle yesterday, and they've got the right idea about things. The racing is the engine on the train here.
Right. I mean, how much credit does Lou deserve right now in so many different areas, you know? I mean, I know I'm going to sound like a homer here because I was born and raised in Hot Springs and I've always been close with the Selle family. But, you know, as aggressive as Lou has been in so many different areas, extending the race meet to Kentucky Derby Day, which was huge, and now backing it up to December, which hopefully will be huge, backing the Arkansas Derby up 5 weeks. You know, I mean, this is something that the younger generation, which Lou represents at Oaklawn Park and Oaklawn Park ownership, is able to get away with. You know, I mean, when I was in management there briefly, I tried to talk Charles into backing up the Arkansas Derby. And Charles would be like, you know, I would never do that. The meet has to end on Arkansas Derby Day. And, you know, Charles was a wonderful guy, but he was very much a traditionalist, right? He didn't want to change too many things. But, you know, in comes Lou, and, you know, Charles did wonderful things for Oaklawn Park, put it on the map, and Lou's not only keeping that ball rolling, but he's enhancing it with his willingness to step out and try new things. It's fantastic.
New era at Oaklawn, but all the familiar parts of Hot Springs and everything that comes with this in place, Randy. And I'm sure we'll see you soon enough. Did you look at the cards at all? Have you looked at the weekend?
Not from a gambling perspective. Sorry, I just looked to see, you know, how big the fields were and, you know, what horsemen they were getting there and, you know, some of the top, you know, horses that are going to be running there. But I didn't look at it from a betting perspective. But I am going to follow Oaklawn closely in that area this year. And I'm not working for NFL this fall, so I'm going to have plenty of opportunity to sit around and gamble on Oaklawn Park, which I intend to do.
Well, we look forward to catching up on the road as the calendar turns. Randy Moss, everybody, and Randy, happy holidays. I didn't expect after we talked a couple of weeks ago on the timing frustrations that continue seemingly unabated. but I'm glad to kick off the Oaklawn 21-22 season with you.
And thanks for indulging my far too long story about Crimson Saint.
No, everybody, that's part of what is making this, you know, interesting and engaging is just that. And I'm going to try to put up a. I'm trying to find every picture I'm finding of Crimson Saint is like tiny. I'm trying to find a good sized one. I'll probably go into my newspapers.com and find a newspaper clipping instead. That'll be better. But I mean, the name, her name is invoked, you know, on a. on a regular basis. And one of the things you're going to love here, that when you see the new hotel, and if you heard this story yet, but Dash Goff has donated the No Double trophy collection.
No kidding.
It's in a mammoth trophy case that was built into the lobby and the underpinnings of the elevator shaft, the escalator angle. And I'll send you a picture. People are going to be, their jaws are going to hit the floor. It's incredible.
Wow, that is amazing. When I was just a kid, we took a vacation to Florida to the opening of Disney World, my family in Hot Springs, with Bob Holthus, our next-door neighbor, and our dear family friend, the late Bob Holthus. Mm. And we stayed at Verna Lee Farm in Ocala, Florida, which was Dash Goff's parents, Gene Goff and his wife, Verna Lee. So I go back with Dash a long way, and I got to know his father as well. Dash is a great guy. I can't wait to see that collection. That's really cool. The Arkansas Traveler, No Double.
Exactly, and I just sent you a series of four pictures, and Dash was thrilled to give them a home essentially. So it everybody happy.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that with me.
Randy Moss, folks. Randy Moss TV on your Twitter. Randy, happy holidays. Thanks so much for this.
You too, Steve. Take care. Have a good opening day at Oaklawn.
Hey, happy Oaklawn. Here it is. We're here. Unbelievable. Randy Moss, everybody. We'll stay right here to the bottom of the hour. Mike Welch will join us at 10:30 Eastern. Right now, though, James Scully swings in. And Scully, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I've been listening along. I hear you're driving from Hot Springs to Memphis after you finished up this weekend at Oaklawn Park. And just want to tell you, I've made that drive many a time. I've gone to Oaklawn Park always with friends from Memphis. And, that you're really in for a terrific, scenic-filled drive there. Great, beautiful countryside and compelling visuals. Don't know if you've made that drive before.
Oh, I have. I mean, because it's so difficult. The only time I can angle into Little Rock, it seems. If I'm going east to west, I can't get to Little Rock. If I'm going west to east, I can. It's the strangest thing. And from Albany, literally from Albany, New York, to Little Rock, you can't go. You have to take six flights. It's the craziest thing. So I fly to Memphis, the first time I came here, it's 6 years ago was my first trip here, and I did it then. And not only did I enjoy the week at Oaklawn, but I had a almost a full day at Memphis, and I didn't go to Graceland, but I went up, Elvis Presley Boulevard there and got to see what that's about. I did get to the Civil Rights Museum, and which was unbelievably moving, and there's so much more in Memphis. I want to go to the Peabody Hotel. I want to see the ducks come out and go into the fountain. I mean, there's Sun Records. Oh, yeah. I want to get to. There's a lot of things yet to do in Memphis.
Well, my first visit to Oaklawn, went saw Cigar with Oaklawn Handicap in 95, and one time I went down there late in the 90s and went to West Memphis to the Greyhound West Memphis the first time. And boy, oh boy, has that place ever changed. It's become like a mecca. I mean, back 20 years ago, it was like a real, it was just a Greyhound track where you could go and bet simulcasting, and now it's completely changed. So, I hope you have a great weekend. It's wild that with Oaklawn Park opening in December and racing this year, and good luck to you there. That's great about you doing that symposium every year.
Yeah, this year. Head to Tucson afterward, and then we'll do a couple days at Los Al too on the back end. And looking forward getting a special visit in with Art Sherman as his incredible a long career comes to a close.
I just want to mention, just last weekend was a closing weekend at Churchill, and I'm sure you discussed a bunch of Smile Happy this week, but I came away really impressed with that Colt. I liked the way his, numbers rose from his debut to that race. He got a 98% speed rating, a 102 late pace number from us, which are real strong figures. And, one thing about him, Steve, is he's got some tactical speed. He's not this one-run closer. He wasn't too far back in the early stages. Obviously being by Run Happy, but that damn side of his pedigree has all the stamina built into it. Looks really promising to me going forward for Kennyman Peak.
And that seems to be the consensus, James. Everybody very impressed, so... We'll look ahead. What did you do anything on the future wager at all? Did you take part?
I did. I played the Asmussen's horse, the Enticing. I played him a little bit, and I got some action on Giant Games. So played those two colts as individuals. Obviously, neither one of them were running Saturday. That result, had a big effect upon it. I think created value on the other 22 individual horses. So, those were my plays, Steve.
Okay.
Epic Center, not Enticing. I'm sorry. Epic Center. I don't know why I said Enticing. Epic Center for Asmus. And that Not This Time colt that stretched out that mile in his second start, broke his maiden by 3.5 lengths. I like the way he did it that day and the figures he got. So, I thought he was pretty promising last out, made winner. And I like Giant Game with his run in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile on the far turn. So those are two colts I thought had like some upside or a good price.
Well, and that's all you're looking for here. I mean, you're just speculating, and the idea is to get out way out ahead of it, and it's a low percentage play, but it's fun.
Yeah,
it's fun to pull these in. I actually didn't get anything in. I kind of lost track of time and. I forget what was going on last Sunday, but. And I completely forgot about the sire wager. I mean that one completely escaped, and it wasn't until I saw I got the email notice from Darren Rogers. Pool closes. I'm like, oh,
that's a real crapshoot. I mean, just a complete
The sire.
I think it's neat they offer that wager, but yeah, I like getting these future wagers on these Derby horses. It's fun to have some horses live on Derby Day, but it's not something like you said. It's more for fun. You're not investing. I'm not investing a lot of money on it, at least in November.
Let's invest some money this weekend, James. What do we like?
All right. Well, I'll just start right with Aqueduct. Roll right through those stakes. Just starting with the Go for Wand. I think Lady Rocket's going to be going to run a big race there. I think that one turn mile distance is going to fit her. I think she could just prove too fast. The other horse I thought had a shot in there. If Lady Rocket does falter at a short price, I thought number 6 Truth Hurts had something going for her. So that's how I saw that race in the Go for Wand. Turning the page to the Remsen. I really, obviously I thought Mo Donegal had some things going for him. Off after stretching out to a mile and a 16th and breaking his maiden like he did. But I think number 7, Zandon, has that it factor, Steve. I thought that was a terrific debut performance after a slow start. I do think he looks like a colt's going to really appreciate the stretch out to a long, two-turn mile and an eighth distance. So I just look at Zandon. I think he's going to be tough to beat in there for Chad Brown.
All right.
And then going really my bet, turning my tips to the Demoiselle, I did give the edge to number 6 Tap the Faith, the $1.2 million, yearling purchase. She got a 106 late pace number in her debut, comes back pretty quickly here for Christophe Clement 27 days later. Just seems like it has a lot going for her. I do think that this is a pretty wide open race. you know, you got a lot of horses on the morning line that are like 6-1 or lower. I thought number three was a little bit interesting. I'm keeping my eyes on her price, Venti Valentine for Jorge Abreu. I just thought those were the two horses that I like the most in there. It's pretty wide open race, though, pretty competitive, Demoiselle.
Cigar Mile.
Cigar Mile, number one, Falling Seas. The thing here is that Pletcher has these two colts, number one, Fallen Seas, and number three, American Revolution. I think American Revolution is going to point-blank get bet off the board off of like these numbers he's earned here recently. And I'm not putting a lot of stock into that Empire Classic figure on a sloppy track. Don't think he'd beat the toughest competition in there. Didn't think he'd beat the good, really a good field in the Albany. His third place effort in the Pennsylvania Derby, was solid. But to me, Falling Seas really got valuable seasoning and experience this summer. They ran him in the Haskell, which was too far. But I really thought the Jerkins was a really big learning experience. He took a big step forward off of that effort when he won the Vosburgh and then had a trouble trip last time in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. I think the one-turn mile is going to be a great bet, and I really like Falling Sea in the Cigar Mile. He's my best bet of the day at Aqueduct, Steve.
Interesting. I think, and I know Hammer, when we talk to Hammer later, when he gets back from there doing the scratches, I know that's who he landed on as well. All right, there's... So Lady Rocket, Zandon, Tap the Faith in the Demoiselle with a little Venti Valentine, and Following Sea in the Cigar Mile. Where else you playing this weekend?
Turfway Park. I mentioned Turfway Park last night. You know, Gerardo Corrales is the defending champion there. He got off to a terrific start last night, winning four races, including three in a row. Booted home like a couple big long shots. Really riding well. And tomorrow, my best bet of the day, they have a stake race tomorrow, the Holiday Inaugural at 6 furlongs. It's race number 5. But the race I'm looking at Turfway Park tomorrow, Steve, is race number 8. It's number 11, Star Shopping. This is a Midnight Storm colt. Ran first time out on the turf. Ran a really good race at Ellis Park to be fourth behind Ready to Perform, who came back and won a stake race next time out for Brad Cox. Came and caught a yielding turf Star Shopping, did second time out on the turf at Keeneland. You know, ran a solid fifth behind Gingrich, who won that race as a favorite. Look, I thought it was a pretty solid field. Last time out at Churchill Downs is a complete throwout to me on the main track. Just never ran a step on the dirt. Adds blinkers, adds Corrales. Has a work over the track for Brendan Walsh. I think the Star Shopping will relish the switchback to an all-weather track. He's 6-1 on the morning line. This holiday meet last year, Steve, averaged 10.5 runners per race. Once again, these opening days all have like 10 or 12 horses in every single race. So always little bit of some opportunity for value. Even if you get a short price winner, you got opportunity for value in the vertical exotics there. So my pick of the day there is Star Shopping in the 8th race tomorrow.
What kind of I know it was just an 8 race card and it's opening night, but anything that you noticed other than Corrales dominating?
If the Tapeta looked pretty fair, you saw some front running winners, you saw some off the pace winners. So I'm gonna pay more attention, tonight and tomorrow going forward. But I didn't see anything out of the usual last night.
You did have in that nickel claimer that Corrales brought home, that 60-1 shot was something.
Yeah.
Rhett Thomas for Felipe Salas, Justin Philip Gelding, and we say it so often. If you're looking for crazy prices, more often than not, it's either a wire job very frequently, or some extreme, one or the other, either a horse gets loose on the lead or you get a meltdown. That's your two recipes for bombs. Corrales, I take Corrales. He's very good. And it was, I guess it was, I don't know, was it two? I guess it was two Yeah, I guess it was 2020 probably started to kind of notice, notice him more and more. And it gets takes some calls for Wesley Ward. And anyway,
he can ride. And that jockey colony, you know, Bayerano won 17 races at Churchill in the fall meet, had a terrific meet. Talamo's there.
Yep.
So, you know, there's some depth to that colony.
Joe Rocco.
Yeah, Joe Rocco. Yeah, he won a race last night from Tomlinson. Rocco did. So yes, some good riders there at Turfway. This meet. You know, I did pick. I have a glance looking at that Aqueduct Pick Six a little bit today, Steve. I got one last horse for you.
Go ahead.
Race number 10 is this New York bred entry level allowance at Aqueduct today. I don't think it's the strongest field. Number 3, She's the One, lost her last race, is the favorite. Number 6, Write This Down, has to get out of the gate for Jeffrey Engelhart. But if she gets out of the gate, she's got a real shot to run well on the front end there. She's 12-1. She's a filly that I'll have in any multi-race bet. So that's my last second. Write This Down, number 6 in race 10, last second Friday play.
It's a tough nightcap.
Really tough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, James Scully. He put 3 straight works in at Finger Lakes out of the gate in her, so hopefully those worked.
Well, I've kept it kind of simple in there. Personally, I thought Uncle's Gem on the outside for Linda Rice, and She's the One. You know, she's the One continues to move forward, but
she'll be real tough. Exactly.
There's plenty in here. I mean, Highway Queen's okay. Comset finally broke through for Gary last time and provided him with that 1,000th win. See what she does. I mean, she doesn't have 6 furlong. You know, people are going to look at her and see the ones, but she does not necessarily have the kind of speed for a sprint. She's got route speed, and that's different. So this is a weird group. I thought Mashney Girl was far from impossible for Mark Hennig. So it very, very tough sequence and a challenging nightcap. If it's not one of the two obvious players, it could get very squirrely. James _ Scully 111 on your Twitter machine. And James, good luck.
Thanks,
this weekend,
Steve.
Thank you, buddy.
Same to you.
We'll stay right here to the bottom of the hour before we take a break. So we got about 8-9 minutes, and it's a busy morning, but I want to be able to thank Jason Milligan, Vice President of Racing at Oaklawn, and got to see Jason this summer at Del Mar, of all places. And not that I didn't see you here previously, but a chance to spend time at Del Mar, and happy to be back here, Jason. Thanks to you and Hammer and Mr. Sella and everybody. It's exciting what's going on here.
Well, it's always great to have you here with us as well. We love having you here whenever you can make it. December's here. We're ready.
What adjustments for you and from an operational standpoint and what Pat Pope and Hammer, what needed to be done? Anything different, or just a question of just shifting the calendar?
Well, there's a little bit more to that, obviously, more behind the scenes. Obviously, the biggest thing was moving all your timelines up. So, barn area, try to get it open, on time. But also, the racing rules. So there's a process that, that takes time to go through. So you're kind of meeting deadlines on that, which normally we had December to get them all approved because we didn't run until January.
Right.
So now you get them approved like late November, right before you open. So, and then it's just getting the word out to all the horsemen that these are our new approved rules.
But basically, you just pick up the phone and call Alex Lieblong, and he takes care of everything.
There you go. So, but and with all the, a lot of it really was in house, was just all the different construction projects we started. To basically give the grandstand a new look. We've changed the oyster bar. It's now called the Cove.
Yeah.
We've got a new food stand right by the paddock called Tacos and Tequila. We've built two ponds in the infield. We've got three new concession stands going on in the infield. Yeah. So it's like, could you bite off a little bit more when you're already, you know, condensing yourself down a month and a half, you know, sooner than what you have had in the past.
It's a good point. And you don't really think about that. And the one thing that people immediately talked about that ends up being a complete non-issue ended up being weather. It's going to be glorious. Yesterday was insane how beautiful it was.
Yeah, Hammer went and played golf in shorts.
It's so funny because when I was packing and I said to Tina, I said, I'm also going to Tucson and LA. And I said, I don't think I'm going to bring a swimsuit, or I'm not going to bring shorts and short sleeve shirts. Not because I didn't anticipate there might be nice weather. You know, I had this goofy health situation. So I've had so many EKGs that they've shaved. I'm a fairly hairy guy. And so I'm all shaved up. Like I look like Tom Carell in the 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Okay.
And I couldn't envision taking the shirt off and having all these goofy spots that they had they shaved my chest and said I'm not bringing anything in that's going to invite me, you know, taking my shirt off.
Well, that was the thing when we announced December. Hammer called me and goes, "What's the weather like in December?" And I said, "The weather in December is gorgeous." I said, "It's completely different." He goes, "What?" I said, "I promise you, it is completely different." And he showed up and he came to my office, knocked on my door, poked his head in, and said, "You're right." Yeah.
To give everybody an example, first of all, they're going to see today when the simulcast.
Right.
And in fact, Mr. Selle yesterday sort of referenced the Keeneland-esque kind of look. And the trees are still, first of all, the trees are still dropping leaves.
The fall foliage.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, it's a little bit past peak, obviously.
You got some greens, you got some yellow, you got some orange out there. So
very surprising from that standpoint. And I'm completely, completely delighted by this. The one thing that, and Nancy Holtish is probably coming back at some point, I hope. The town, no way to know that Christmas is such a big deal in Hot Springs, but there's all these light displays all over town. And
yes.
It's really nice.
Yes, there are. I mean, you know, and just everyone right now, you know, with the influx of, you know, starting racing in, a lot of tourism kind of picks it up a little bit of another notch in December as well with us opening today.
Unbelievable. What message do you want delivered out there to the horse players and to fans about coming to visit or, you know, anything?
You know, if you want to make reservations, you know, you can go do all the reservations online this year. You don't have to call us. You can do it all online. Hotel, grandstand seating, everything is done online. So that's new for us this year. We're trying to make it more user friendly, so you know people don't get stuck on long telephone lines just waiting for their call to be answered, because that was one of our big complaints we had previously. We just appreciate all the support everyone gives us. I mean, we're in a lucky situation. We have a great area that really supports Oaklawn and horse racing.
No doubt. I mean, like Saratoga, we bring this up with every kind of conversation when it turns to this. It is just, you've got a hotbed of interest and association, and it includes, you know, heritage, and you know, we talked to Randy Moss earlier, grew up here, Pat Day, and you know, the Holtis family, and I mean, you could go through a whole litany of families that either grew up here or settled here, and you got people that end up retiring. Jerry Hissom retired.
Right.
Was Jerry?
Yeah, he lives here.
I know he lives here, but I can't remember if he was from here.
I don't think originally.
I think originally.
I think he's from Illinois for some reason.
Okay. All right. There's any number, I mean, over the years that we've come to.
The Whiteds, you know, Jinx Fires.
There you go.
You know, just, you know, we've been blessed with some great horsemen.
Yeah, no doubt. And an environment that's so conducive to, atmosphere and cultivation of horse players generation to generation. From that standpoint, it's all the elements are here, everything you could want. And, you know, Saratoga, anybody that likes Saratoga is gonna like and come to love Hot Springs the same way. It's got a very similar vibe, without a doubt.
Yeah. One other thing I will note, because sure. it just came out about 48 hours ago, is I'd like to welcome all of our listeners in Nevada back. Oakland City will be available to Nevada today, so we're excited about that. Glad to be back there.
How much, out of curiosity, does that fall in? Are you involved with the simulcast negotiations?
A little bit. Not really with the negotiations, but just kind of listen to the conversations.
How much of Oaklawn's in availability helped tip the scales?
You know, I really don't know that. I just know it's something that's kind of, it just kind of popped up. Really, we didn't think anything was going to happen, and it was just boom. I mean, really, I think it all fell together in probably the last 128 hours.
Unbelievable.
I really believe it's that quick.
Well,
I said, we're happy, and that's all that matters. I mean, I've received many phone calls in previous years, you know, disappointed fans,
of course,
because they couldn't see Oakland in Nevada. So, but we're glad to be back starting today.
Well, I will tell you where it's going to come into play is for the NHC.
Yes.
When we get to Vegas in January, the opportunity to have Oakland in the mix
We weren't there the last 2 years.
No. So that's a home run.
Yeah.
I'm glad I mentioned it at the top of the show, the Nevada signal situation, I'm glad you brought it back up. Jason, best of luck to you, to the staff, the team, all the horsemen, the players, everybody. We're going to be here at least two more times.
Awesome.
Two more visits, including an extended visit, Rebel and the HPPA convention.
Okay, you're coming for the week.
Yeah.
Well, great, because I know you're here the week of April 2nd for Derby. So
I've got to adjust to that.
Oh,
I've booked out through March. I haven't the April side of things.
Yeah, that's the biggest change probably is the Arkansas Derby going 5 weeks before the Kentucky Derby.
Well, because we got very used to going Santa Anita Derby and then coming back through here on the way home for a week to then drive to Louisville for 2 weeks.
Right.
So we got to figure out.
We didn't take you into consideration. I apologize.
That's all right. I can adjust. Jason Milligan, everybody, VP of racing operations, getting our first half wrapped up. Let's take a break. We'll go to Gulfstream, talk to Mike Welch for a quick hit, and check in on the start of the winter season in Hallandale Beach. Coming to you from Oakland. It's been a fun, fast 3 days. Crazy how quickly it's gone by. We'll come back. Hammer's back upstairs from the racing office. We'll find out about scratches and much, much more. Stay with us. We've got Scott Shapiro is going to join us for some opinions, some Oakland opinions. Nick Tamaro, of course. We'll talk to Nick. Nick is going to walk through he and I will probably go through the pick six carryover today, and we might have scratches by then as well, so that'll help. And Bobby Shoemaker with a couple of plays later. Stay with us. Second half at the races. Sirius XM back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why?